Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
Another great show on the way today here with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe. It is The Advertising Show, being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com and by Captivate Network. Visit them at captivate.com. The Advertising Show, a Big Radio Midgets production. Alex Van Block with us today, and we always have fun with Alex. He is a great guy. He's got so many new official titles here. What the heck did I do? Hang on just a minute, Brad. I got to read the right one here. He'll be mad, I think. I'm not sure. Let's see. Alex is editor-at-large at The Hollywood Reporter and also the show business historian at Hollywood Today. So, Alex, as always, a great guest, and we'll be with him here momentarily. Also momentarily, Jean Bliss, our customer experience, delivers small acts of kindness is what she's talking about today. That's not a bad idea. Shameen Abbas, later on in the show, we'll be talking about research. If you were listening to Saturday Night Live and you're caught up in the election stuff, or maybe you're not, you know what happened with Tina Fey and Amy Poehler when they did the Sarah Palin-Hillary Clinton skit. Brad, did you happen to catch that skit?
A few weeks ago, you know, I was going to record that, and I didn't because I heard Obama decided against appearing. He was scheduled to appear, and I just forgot to record it. So, no, I have not seen that.
Well, basically, there's a lot of people who are upset about that. They thought that they went a little bit too deep. There's a lot of people who critique that kind of stuff in the entertainment industry, and they say, yeah, it was probably a bad place to go, but here's what you're all missing. It was supposed to be funny. This is a comedy show, and it wasn't funny. So, you know, leave it to whether it be SNL or any other type of comedy show to sometimes miss the mark. They do an awfully good job most of the time. But in this particular case, took it a little bit below the belt, so to speak. That was kind of a mistake. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, Saturday Night Live, just like other programs, you know, Monty Python, et cetera, they're all about, you know, satire and stuff, right? Sometimes doing things too extreme to be funny. And, you know, funny thing about humor, it varies with the individual, and that's why, you know, one comic is appeals to one group of people, and another comic appeals to another, and it's rare that one comic appeals to everyone. So, it's a comedy's a funny thing. I didn't get to see it, but you know, I certainly know that there are times that Saturday Night Live and others have taken it a little far. I don't know. I wouldn't know what to comment on because I didn't see it.
Okay, the Emmys, and I guess we can ask Alex about this too later on in the show. Emmys ratings the lowest since 1992.
Yeah,
I wonder who hosted that show. Fox spokesperson said in an emailed statement, the Emmys crowned basic cable channels with top honors in AMC's Mad Men, which both of us really think it's a great that's a great show, and glad to see that. But basically, 12.2 million viewers trailing NBC for the Dallas Cowboys Green Bay Packers football game. Very interesting, huh? So that's, you know, that's the state of the Emmys this year, and it continues to plummet as well.
You know, did you see the opening of the Emmys, right?
No, I was watching the football game.
You were. Yeah, I got to tell you, it really made me feel uneasy. And for the first minute or so, Laura, my wife, and I were sitting there watching, and it was like, is this scripted or is this ad lib? And you really couldn't tell. Yeah. Until it got a little further in and you realized it was not scripted and it was just poorly executed. It's one of those things, and we've all experienced this before, where you're watching something and it makes you feel uneasy watching these so-called professionals out there.
Screw it up.
Really screwing up. So anyway.
Wow.
It'll be interesting to get Alex's take on that.
Absolutely. Jean Bliss is with us here at the Advertising Show.
Welcome to the Customer Experience. Making customers your true priority for a profitable outcome. With your host, author, speaker, consultant, and customer crusader, Jean Bliss.
Today we continue our series, Soothing the Savaged Consumer Soul. Now we move on to deliver small acts of kindness. Small kindnesses will go a long way right now. We are all so fatigued from walking away empty-walleted that small gestures will really stand out. Zane Cycles, a bicycle shop in Connecticut, sells $15 million a year from a single shop. Yet they give away any item that a customer is in panic about finding, read a link that might fix your broken chain, that costs under a dollar. Think about a dad with a 10-year-old whose bike is broken. One stop at Zane's and they save the day without charging anything. Every day, Zane's extends these small heroic acts that sends customers away shaking their head in amazement. My husband came home from the dry cleaners last week and they gave him a dollar package of collar stays, which he was going to buy, but they gave him. Amazement. What can you do?
This has been your weekly installment of The Customer Experience with Gene Bliss. Directing transformational customer insights for major U.S. market leaders, Gene is corporate America's change agent for a new inspirational understanding of today's consumer. To learn more about Gene's books and speaking engagements, or simply how to drive customer profitability for your company, log on to CustomerBliss.com.
Thank you, Gene. On the Advertising Show, it's Ray Schill and Brad Forsyth. Alex Ben Block, the editor-at-large at The Hollywood Reporter, and a show business historian at Hollywood Today. His daughter, by the way, we've talked about Haley Taylor. If you check out some of her music, it's pretty cool stuff. Anyway, that's Alex coming up in just a few moments on the Advertising Show. What do you have there?
You know, I thought this was a clever idea, Ray. Comcast Spotlight and Mixpo have partnered to make it easy for small to medium-sized businesses, also called SMBs, to create online video ads. SMBs, as I said, they're called, have created TV spots with Comcast Spotlight. Which, of course, is the ad division of Comcast, can repurpose them for the web through Mixpo's online video platform, complete with unique landing pages and detailed performance reporting. Smart move, I think, on Comcast's part. And, you know, anytime a small to mid-sized business can advertise on cable and repurpose it on the web through another source, but a source that's tied back to your original cable company, this being Comcast, I think is just really smart on Comcast's part.
Yeah, why not make something like that effective and make sense for everybody? It's Ray Schillen's Brad Forsyth with Alex Ben Block coming up next on the Advertising Show. There's a good reason to stick around.
Here comes another typical commercial. I could get your attention by blowing a foghorn, or maybe an awesome scream. But even that doesn't cut through the clutter enough to really captivate your attention. If you're an advertiser and you really want your message to be heard, then reach for the golden nugget of advertising. It's what's called a captive audience. One company delivers this much sought-after captive audience. And believe it or not, it's just the people you want to reach, business professionals and decision makers. It all happens in 23 of North America's largest and most progressive markets. And the captive audience is right there in the elevators of select premier office towers. Over 8,000 high-quality video screens get people's attention with what research proves they want, news and information. It's all combined with your branded message in a way that only this captive audience sees and absorbs. Cut the waste in your advertising budget by reaching just who you want to reach. Don't just advertise. Captivate your audience. To find out more, click on Captivate.com.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillen and Brad Forsyth.
I'd like to buy the world a home and furnish it with love.
And if you're a longtime listener to The Advertising Show, like we know many, many are, way back since 2001, you'll know this name, Alex Ben Block, who is a regular guest here on The Advertising Show, and for very good reason. He's just such an amazing wealth of information about entertainment, about advertising and marketing, of course, and as it relates to that as well. And he's also the editor-at-large at The Hollywood Reporter and a show business historian for Hollywood Today. And, well, there's more, but I'd rather just get to the interview part here. Well, Alex, as always, a pleasure to have you here. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm always happy to be here.
Yeah, this past week, Alex, no surprise to most, I guess, we had the Emmy Awards, but yet maybe a surprise to many because not a lot of people watched the Emmy Awards. I watched the Open, and I felt a little uneasy, frankly, during those five reality TV hosts. I didn't know if that was a shtick that they were putting on or whether it was for real and just not going very well, and I got a feeling that it was the latter. Share with us, what were the ratings for the Primetime Emmys and just your whole take on the evening.
Well, the 60th annual Primetime Emmys was the Limburger cheese of Emmy Awards. It still stinks even now. Days after, they're talking about how bad it smelled. It was probably the worst Emmy show ever, or certainly right up there. And you put your finger right on it. That opening with the five reality show hosts, where they openly admitted they'd done nothing to prepare, had nothing to say, and then you realize they weren't comics, they weren't witty, they weren't clever, they were guys who read lines to move people on reality shows from left of screen to right of screen, and, you know, Howie Mandel's a comic, but for the most part, it was just dreadful, and if you look at the Nielsen ratings, people turned it off in droves after that. They were disgusted with the show. And so, well, there was some nice moments in there, you know, acceptance speeches by different people and some great stuff in terms of the human elements. Overall, the production of the show was just terrible. And it's reflected in the ratings. These were the worst ratings basically in the history of the Emmys. People said last year they couldn't get any worse. It was the worst in 17 years. This year they got worse. And it's very crucial for the Academy, which makes most of their money off this show, and then after next year's show, it has to renegotiate the deal. And it's going to be very difficult to get the broadcasters to keep putting up the money. Some people think it should go to cable, but really that could be sort of the end of the show as a big event.
Hmm. So you would expect not the economic value back to the Academy that has been as a result of this past Academy Awards, or Emmy Awards, rather?
They're getting $7.5 million a year at the moment for the broadcast rights, which is about one quarter of what the Oscars go for. So you'd think they'd be a little underpriced. But with the kind of experiences they've been having, and they have a built-in problem now, and that is football on NBC wins the night. It was a huge, it's probably the number one show for the whole week, was the game involving the Dallas Cowboys and the Green Bay Packers that was up against the Emmys. And there's no question who won. Football won, and the Emmys lost.
Hmm. Well, I can envision, the TV Academy apologizing for a bad call on the five reality hosts. And you tell me, what were ratings the year before when the gentleman from Comedy Central hosted?
Oh, they've been going down steadily since 2000, the ratings. They peaked in 2000. Remember, in 2001, they had to delay the show twice because of the 9/11.
Right.
And then they've had some other problems. And then 2 years ago, NBC made them move the show to the end of August, which was a disaster, and that hurt them. And some people in the Academy feel they've never recovered from that, that it threw everything off. Originally, the Emmys were put there for a reason. It's when the automobile companies introduced their new models. And the whole television season concept was put in place to take advantage of automobile advertising in the fall for the new models, and then the Emmys were supposed to be the celebration of TV, the kickoff of the fall TV season, and a great place to put your auto ads. And And this year it's different. This was the year that GM, for the first time in decades, dropped out as an advertiser of the Emmys. And so it's a different world, and the Emmys are not adjusting well.
Not to mention that the old days of everyone introing their fall programming the same week has been over for a while, and there are programs that are yet to even debut for fall. Let's talk a little bit about the surprise winners for the Emmy Awards last weekend. Who were they, Alex?
Well, first, there weren't that many surprises because the people who got the most nominations, the wonderful John Adams miniseries on HBO, I thought, the wins by 30 Rock in the comedy category. There was some question about Mad Men, which did win Best Drama. And Mad Men is a show on AMC, and it gets much lower ratings than, say, on broadcast networks. It might get 100,000 viewers where they get 3 million viewers. But it shows that really it's about the quality of the work. And more the quality work is being done on cable TV, on channels like USA and TNT and AMC. And so it's changing the dynamics, and that's a little bit of a surprise watching that happen.
You know, we're big fans, or Ray and I've talked about Mad Men here on the advertising show, and I frankly, you know, say what you will about its true depiction of advertising, but, you know, I think, and I don't know how familiar you are with it, Alex, but it really captures the culture and the times and life of what was going on back in the late 50s and early 60s, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's marvelous, and I love the kind of sexiness and smartness of the whole thing, and the way it's presented, and it absolutely captures that era. And, you know, that really is an insight into what advertising was really about in that time as well.
You know, and you mentioned the lower ratings for AMC for Mad Men, yet I guess it's viewed now by cable network advertisers as more of a qualitative buy as opposed to going with the broader numbers or the higher ratings that you get on broadcast. Is that more the mindset?
Oh, absolutely. What you're looking at is a better educated audience, probably a higher income level for that audience. And it's part of what's going on in media, which is more and more it's about targeted audiences. It's about having good research that tells you who the buyers are, who the potential buyers are, and then targeting them so that on their TV set alone, as cable subscribers, they get ads that are just for them because their household has bought products in that category and you know they're interested in those products. And whether it's in print or on television, that's really where we're headed.
You know, I think just to add to that before we wrap up this segment, BMW and other advertisers have done a great job in Mad Men in offering information in addition to their spot about old advertising and certain just nuances about advertising of the 60s of that particular advertiser's brand. And I think it just holds the viewership's interest in going through the stop set and learning more about the advertiser's brand than would normally get. It's a great treatment, and I think they do a great job on that show beyond just the content.
It gets people involved with the brand emotionally, and that's what it's about.
Editor-at-large of the Hollywood Reporter and a show business historian with Hollywood Today, it's our special guest, Alex Ben Block, here at the Advertising Show. And there's more.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
Alex Ben Block is a frequent guest here at The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. He is editor-at-large of The Hollywood Reporter and a show business historian with Hollywood Today. It's always a pleasure to have you here, Alex. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah, election year, no surprise there for any of us that are, you know, out of our caves and walking around sleeping and eating and breathing nowadays. But I'm just curious, Alex, your take on the election and the typical spike in ad dollars the media usually sees in a presidential election year?
Well, absolutely. The presidential election is going to be a bonanza to local television stations and some national advertisers, even to cable more than in the past. However, it's very different. You know, we talked earlier about targeting. Nowhere is targeted advertising being used more than in this election. You have very sophisticated people, both on the McCain campaign and the Obama campaign, and they're putting all of their money into the so-called battleground states, like Ohio and Florida and Nevada, where they believe the swing state vote is going to determine this election. So if you live in California like I do, or if you live in New York, then probably you're not going to see very much advertising because they've already put that those states either in one column or the other, at least in terms of their strategy. And so there will be tremendous amounts of money spent, but it's going to be very much focused in a number of key areas. It's not going to be the broad stroke. They're really going to go after, even within those areas, blue-collar voters or educated voters or female voters very clearly with specific ads. course, the question always becomes negative advertising. How much of that are they going to use?
So I assume that ends up being a surprise loser for many states, as you point out, California, New York, and others. And I think we've all heard commentators talk about how, you know, I don't know specifically, but, you know, one party has to win this state or they'll lose the election. Another party has to win this state. And you're saying that the focus of dollars are being spent in these battleground states. Is that, was that expected? And how are these states that typically get spending through election dollars weathering the storm and not getting those dollars as usual?
Well, this is a tough economy for everybody, including local TV stations, which for years were almost a license to print money. But they're working a lot harder today. They got new competition online, in print, guerrilla marketing, outdoor marketing, all kinds of stuff. And so local TV stations are having to scramble. I think what you saw was, for instance, during the primary, there were TV stations in Iowa that just got tremendous amounts of business, or wherever, whatever the primary state was at the time. And I think that the trend has been in recent years toward this more targeted advertising. But what's changed is the technology. With cable TV, with the new advanced AC Nielsen company measuring devices, even being able to measure VCR and DVR usage, I think it's much more specific than it has in the past. And that's really where these people are going. They're using YouTube as much as they're using CBS to sell this election.
You know, talk a little bit about a great article you just recently wrote about some of the giants of corporate Hollywood. And of course, if you're not if you're not familiar, you know, visit HollywoodReporter.com and you'll do a search there and you'll see the article we're talking about. But share with us the gist of the article, if you would, Alex.
Well, I got a chance to talk to about half a dozen of the biggest business people in show business in the 1990s. And the lesson here was how hard it is to have a second act in show business. We took and we narrowed down our list. When, we didn't take people who were retiring. We didn't do them. We did people who left in mid-career, either were forced out or quit in mid-career. And then what happened to them? And I got to talk to Michael Ovitz, the former head of CAA, briefly the president of the Walt Disney Company, and he's now a private investor and art collector in New York City and Los Angeles, and he hadn't given an interview in quite a while, but he talked to me on the basis of kind of talking about what happens to you in Hollywood when you go from being scheduled 14 hours a day with hot and cold running secretaries, the company airplane waiting for you, to being on your own, not even having a paycheck anymore, almost overnight. Now, in some cases, they get a golden parachute, lots of money, like Frank Biondi, who I talked to, got big money, both when he left Viacom, and then later when he was forced out of Universal. And Michael Fuchs, when he left Time Warner and HBO, did very well. But Peter Schneider, who had been the chairman of the Walt Disney Company, didn't like his job, didn't like the pressure of it. He quit. He didn't get any money. And today he's completely out of that. He's now actually directing the musical version of Sister Act on stage in London. He's far away from the corporate suite in Hollywood.
Wow.
So I assume that this this article, as you just described, is just kind of a peek behind closed doors of these people and the inner workings of Hollywood and what happens after you're thrown out of the business or decide to leave the business.
Well, you know, they were so high profile, and many people in this situation, and we didn't really count those, take producing deals. And they stay in Hollywood, but as producers, like Bill Mechanic, who ran Fox, is now a producer for hire. But these were the guys who were real big businessmen, who really were corporate guys. And it just shows how difficult it is to get a second chance at the number one job.
Alex Ben Block, our special guest here, editor-at-large, The Hollywood Reporter, and show business historian for Hollywood Today. On The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. We've got another segment to spend with Alex, and we hope you'll stay with us.
How can 18 different companies all sell the exact same thing known as water? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most thought-provoking, groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. Your job demands you not only have good ideas, but great ideas. And those great ideas have to start somewhere. And that somewhere is in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com. How can you get someone's attention if you don't have $10 million in a celebrity endorsement? It starts here, in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most innovative and groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. The next big idea demands out-of-the-box thinking. Start your search for greatness in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
Mm. I love the sound of the rain.
Mm. And I love the taste of your fresh fruit coffee.
Oh, thanks, but it's not fresh fruit. It's Nutreca.
We are so happy to have Alex Ben Block with us today here at the Advertising Show, a frequent guest and editor-at-large at The Hollywood Reporter and show business historian at Hollywood Today. Great to have you here, Alex. Welcome back.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, but Alex, before we talk about the movie industry as well as the upcoming Christmas holiday DVD season, let's talk a little bit about this this network integration fee situation. For decades, network integration fees had been the irritant, to lack of a better term, to both advertisers as well as agencies who all complained, frankly. They said it was a relic of the past, but apparently now, after years of insisting, the fees, I understand, will be going away.
Well, it's now reported that a deal is at hand between ABC, CBS, and NBC, and a number of major advertisers who, like you say, have for years have been chafing at paying fees for inserting their commercials into the network feed, when today it's really a matter of pressing a couple of buttons or, picking up some digital material or maybe carrying a disc. You know, back in the old days, it was literally took a guy who had to get a cassette or had to get a reel and go and put it up at the right moment and do it in real time, and there was real labor involved. But that's over, and so the advertisers have been unhappy about this for some time. They spent around $125 million in 2007 on what they saw as completely unnecessary fees charged by the networks. And, you know, the whole relationship has been changing between advertisers and the networks. In some ways, it's a good thing because it's being more like a partnership than it's been in the past, where they're recognizing each other's problems and trying to deal with it. But what's also happened here is that they are changing the economics. And with the product integration fees and ad sales and so forth, they're now building these costs into the main cost, so they don't have to charge the fee anymore. So it's a big victory for the advertising agencies.
Yeah, I understand just from what I was reading that MediaVest had a major role in negotiating a deal with ABC that kind of was the crack in the dam, so to speak, and made others set up and take notice that maybe something that really had a, as you describe, had a reason behind why it existed, has been over for some time, and it was just another revenue stream for the networks, and they had to come around on that. So, about time, I suppose. And interestingly enough, Alex, none of the networks, or I should say all of the networks, declined to comment on the change and so forth. They're just quietly, I guess, lining up to do that. Let's talk a little bit about the top grossing movies of 2008. What do you see out there, and what do you expect?
I can tell you right now the top grossing movie of 2008, it's not going to change with you now in December 31st, will be the Batman sequel, The Dark Knight. It's a giant commercial and critical hit, and will be the top grossing movie of the year. It broke all kinds of box office records. It's now grossed over $525 million just in the United States, making it second only to the Titanic as a seller of tickets in movie theaters in the history of cinema. It's not going to beat Titanic because it's being pulled out of theaters, but it is being re-released at Christmas. And now the question about The Dark Knight becomes, will it be a factor in the awards season? Well, typically this kind of movie doesn't win Oscars. Every once in a while, one comes along like Titanic. It's both a commercial hit and a critical darling, and The Dark Knight, with the performance of the late Heath Ledger leading the way, could be a factor in the award season more than most summer movies have been in the past. And certainly it'll be out on DVD, it's going to be huge, and they're already talking about doing Batman, the third Batman in this series, which is made for a very dark character, but a very bright box office.
Alex, as always, informative, entertaining, and a pleasure to have you here at the Advertising Show. Great stuff today, and we obviously want to have you back real soon.
Thanks so much, and you be well.
On the Advertising Show is Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth, with more coming your way in just a moment. Stay with us.
There is somewhere better to get inspired creative ideas, and this is where it's at. OpenAd.net, the first online platform for advertisers, changing the way that ideas are created and traded. Access nearly 11,000 creative minds representing 125 countries around the world, waiting online to have a go at your brief. Imagine the impact such range and diversity of talent can have on your next advertising campaign. All creative work is IP cleared before you get it. We take care of all the details, while you get brilliant ideas in a fraction of the time, at a lower cost, and with a lot less fuss. No endless meetings, no away days. When a client needed a PR campaign to include people who couldn't make it to the G8 rally, they got 53,000 people to join a virtual protest and a campaign that won 2 international creative awards. OpenAd.net, busting down the walls of the ad industry. Put us to the test. Just go to openad.net and give us a try. What have you got to lose? The future starts here.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
Here are some most happy fellas, the four lads for Ford.
Always great to have Alex as a part of the show here with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth on the Advertising Show. And, yeah, he'll be back. Absolutely. Sure. Next week, this is a really cool book, not only from its content, but the way it's been prepared. It's called Obsessive Branding Disorder. How about you? Are you suffering? You may be. The Illusion of Business and the Business of Illusion. Lucas Glover is our guest. Lucas hails from a really fine
Lucas
state.
Lucas Glover.
No, not Glover. Lucas Conley. I'm sorry.
Lucas that's
Conley.
Okay.
That's actually a second cousin, but that's fine. Anyway,
that's
Lucas hails from Santa Fe, New Mexico, what an incredible, beautiful part of the country here as well. So, Lucas Conley coming up next week on the Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. And this is something, I don't have any ads on my telephone. Do you have, Brad? Do you have any ads coming your way before?
The only time I get an ad is, are you talking about
cell phone.
Yeah. No, do not. Well, wait a minute. I get some text messages that really pisses me off from Verizon from time to time, but other than that, no.
Okay, well, what they're suggesting here, it's advertising is a funny thing. You say you hate it, but when you end up laughing out loud at the Jack in the Box commercial or humming the McDonald's jingle when you're in the shower and loving it, we're accustomed to ads on television and the internet. Now analysts say that we don't even mind advertising on our cell phones. This is obviously they didn't ask you, Brad. Although only about 9% of people agree with the statement that advertising on their cell phones is acceptable, 31% say it's acceptable if it lowers their wireless bill. Okay, that's what they're suggesting now. We're at a tipping point, he says. The best days for mobile ads are in front of us. Advertising has to be relevant, meaningful and created, he said, if it gives people something of value, if they're not opposed to it. Well, that's what all advertising ought to be. So basically what they're saying is look for more of these things. Look for your phone bill, hopefully, I guess, to come down. Wouldn't that be a concept? But they're suggesting that ads on cell phones are here, and they're getting a little bit more in your face, so to speak. Or I guess it would be in your ear, wouldn't it? Yes, it would. Hey, Shamin Abbas is with us here on the Advertising Show. This particular one is just called Research. So let's find out what she's talking about today.
And now it's time for Activist for Excellence, PR, publicity, and crisis management instruction for today's marketing professional. Now, here's your host, the uncompromising Shamin Abbas.
Research, research, research. With the hectic pace that those in advertising, marketing, and public relations tend to work at, we often feel there just isn't time to read the endless trades or catch up on the headlines. Yet information gathering is something that can immediately inform our choices when we're creating new ways for our clients to reach their audience. I absolutely insist on my team reading the local papers, the national headlines, the trades, and our clients' target publications. The move to put everything in print on the web means that it becomes easier for all of us to access information, troll for data, and pick up an idea that will inspire creative thinking. Now, research isn't a very glamorous-sounding task, but it is vital. One of the first things we do when we bring a college student in for an internship is turn him or her loose on our subscription media databases and assign research products for various clients. It's the fastest way to get them right up to speed. Knowing how to troll the search engines for information is another necessary skill that can net you tremendous amounts of relevant information, data, and opinion. On the PR side, research can mean the difference between a pretty good pitch about a client and a really great one, informed by the perfect nugget of quantifiable data or the latest trends as tracked by the trade associations or research organizations. Relevancy in this age of information saturation is vital. If your team isn't out there cherry-picking useful tidbits from the media stream, you're doing yourselves and your clients a disservice. Create a list of must-read national media for your team and make them stick to it. Reward your team for bringing to the group new sources of information. Make them sign up for daily emails from your industry trades so at least they'll be reading the headlines. And you'll be amazed at the ideas that will flow.
You've been listening to Activist for Excellence, PR, publicity, and crisis management instruction for today's marketing professional with host Shamin Abbas. Shamin is president and founder of Shamin Abbas Public Relations, a full-service agency providing local, regional, national, and international media relations, special event production, and inventive promotion, with offices in New York City and West Palm Beach. To learn more, visit ShaminAbbasPR.com. That's ShaminAbbasPR.com.
Thank you, Shamin. As always, The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. What are you holding there? What is that?
Well, you know, first there was vinyl, then it gave way to 8-tracks, which, by the way, if you could move that unit over a little bit, I keep hitting my knee when I ride in your car, Ray. Then there were cassettes and eventually CDs, but today, so many memory cards, the new CD, four major record labels and some major retailers, including Walmart and Best Buy, are planning to sell music albums on micro SD memory cards. I don't know if you've heard about this, Ray. Mm-hmm. The move is being made in hopes of bringing in more music sales to retailers that have been losing business to internet music stores such as, well, you know who they are.
Oh, yeah.
Apple, etc. But SanDisk Corp is teaming up with the record labels and big box retailers to sell slot music, the memory cards in the MP3 format, which means that they will be free of copyright protection. CD sales of music albums, of course, most people know, fell nearly 20% in 2007. So, you know, you'll be seeing so-called slot music, a SanDisk coming to your store, your Walmart or Best Buy soon. Okay. It'll be interesting to see if that will offset the dip in CD sales. What do you think?
There's nothing like a little healthy competition out there, okay? That's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
This is kind of a sad state of affairs in New York at WNBC. Not the Howard Stern WNBC. This is about the TV station. The seventh floor of 30 Rock, what WNBC's once proud newsroom, is now a construction site. But as the area being turned into a content center, suitable for producing news around the clock, the walls aren't the only things coming down. Morale has plummeted as longtime writers and producers have been told to apply for new jobs as content producers with no guarantee they'll be hired or paid the same salary they make now. I highly doubt they'll get the same thing. Some are bound to be fired since management plans to reduce the headcount. Applications due very soon. Most worrisome is the lack of emphasis on the kind of journalism that will be produced. They have a reputation to uphold. So consequently, things are changing in New York. And if it changes there, it'll change down the street as well. Somebody will say, hey, work there. We'll just go ahead and put that into effect, here as well. Kind of a sad sad state of the nation, so to speak. The Advertising Show. Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth. Powered by Shimple.com, by the way. Check it out with a program called Tendency. It's killer for marketing, web marketing, and all that kind of good stuff. SCHIPUL.com. And we're also being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. And by Captivate Network. You can visit them at Captivate.com. All great partners here at the Advertising Show. Hope you enjoy it. And we hope to see you next week with Lucas Conley, Obsessive Branding Disorder. We'll find out what that's all about.